My name is Donna Korth. I live in Sulphur Springs, Texas. I was born in August of 1938 in Berkeley, California, and I was the first of three children at a time when my parents were struggling with the end of the Great Depression. By 1940, when my brother was born, we moved into a house in a little town called El Cerrito in California that had a big basement in it, and we turned this basement into a sort of an apartment during World War II to help people that swarmed into California from Oklahoma and Arkansas to work in the shipyards to build ships for the war. Now, these people had been hurt by the Dust Bowl in the South, and they had lived very primitively before coming to California, and my parents had to show them how to flush the toilet, take a shower, and so forth. And since we had only one bathroom, and it was upstairs where my family lived, I became well acquainted with all of the renters from downstairs that trooped through our house to use the facilities. And there were children of some, and we called all of these people Okies and Arkies in a loving way. And I played with their children in our big vacant backyard. And we always played war games because as children, we didn't understand the seriousness of World War II. We just knew that all our parents listened to on the radio was the war. We had scary air raid drills in which we turned out all the lights. We put out the fire in our fireplace and we hid under the table. My parents were always worried and kind of concerned that this would work. And my dad was an air raid master and had a armband that he got to wear and go around and check to make sure everybody's lights were all out. And then we had a victory garden, and we saved bacon grease on the back of our stove because it was the only oil available. And we used tokens to pay for some of our food and to ride the bus. And then suddenly the war was over. My sister was born, and life changed. We suddenly had Coca-Cola and root beer and popsicles and bubble gum. And sugar was no longer rationed, and we threw away our tokens. We attended a little Methodist church where at age four I was taught a Bible verse and told to quote it in front of the whole congregation. When I stood in front and faced the sea of faces, I forgot the verse totally and just covered my head with my dress and stood there until my father came and got me. My next opportunity to contribute to this group was when the pastor asked all of the Sunday school children for the meaning of Amen. Well, the answer seemed so obvious to me that I shouted out, "It means you're all through." Well, I was horrified to be laughed at by everyone and told that my answer was wrong. I was very quiet in church after this for several years. My parents were divorced when I was 14, and this was greatly disturbing to me as I wondered if it was my fault. My father took this divorce very poorly and wanted to pull me aside and blame my mother for his problems. So I avoided him. My mother was delighted to have new friends and freedom, so it was easy to stay out of her way. I proceeded to have a sort of a secret life from my parents as a teenager, and they were both working and depending on me to take care of my brother and sister. I did a poor job of this, much to my siblings' delight, because I had transferred my attention to a boyfriend named Bill. When Bill graduated from high school a year ahead of me and joined the Marines, I was heartbroken. But then we were secretly engaged, and so the letters flew between us. I won a scholarship to the Kaiser Foundation School of Nursing in Oakland. And as a new student nurse on probation, I discovered it was going to be more of a challenge than I had anticipated, and I wasn't sure if I was going to stay in the program or not. When it was my turn to give my first injection, a penicillin shot, about 20 people trooped down the hall with me, doctors, nurses, staff, to observe this ritual of honor that I got to do. It was a ritual of honor because it meant that you had reached a certain point as a nurse in probation in training that meant that I just might make it and I could go on to the next level. My patient was dressed and ready to go home, but the doctor wanted him to have one last shot of penicillin before leaving. So he dutifully dropped his drawers and leaned across the bed, which was higher in those days and had big wheels. Now, I had been told wild stories by everyone who knew that I had not accomplished this feat yet about people who had skin like elephants, causing the needle to break or bounce off, or stories of hitting the sciatic nerve, causing permanent damage and paralysis for the rest of their life. And so by the time I got to my patient with my first shot of penicillin, all laid out neatly on a little tray, I was 50% adrenaline and about 50% scared. So I wiped off the chosen spot with alcohol, and then I took this needle and syringe, and I reared back my right arm, and I went wham into this man's buttock. The bed rolled away from under my patient, and he landed on the floor, and all the onlookers covered their faces and either gasped or laughed. This little man looked at me and he said, "Wow, that's the best shot I ever had." He made my day. And so at that moment, I decided to go ahead and become a nurse. During my years in nurses training, Billy Graham came to the Cow Palace in San Francisco, and the students carpooled from Oakland so we could travel across the San Francisco Bay Bridge and attend this crusade. And at this time, I decided to make a visible and timely commitment to go forward and give my life to Jesus Christ. I remember after returning home one night, kneeling at my bedside and telling Jesus I would do whatever he wanted me to do. Well, I felt what seemed like a bolt of lightning flow through the top of my head and down through my knees so that I could barely get up off the floor. I prayed to know what I should do next about this decision. And soon, a man named Sherwood Wirt, who was on the Billy Graham staff team and who was writing a book about this crusade, came to see me. He had gotten my name from among the thousands of forms people could fill out at the crusade indicating their decision, and he had just chosen some at random. He interviewed me, and he proceeded to write a book called Crusade at the Golden Gate that became popular in 1958. He put my testimony in this book, and he told me to call a married couple who lived in Oakland for help in knowing what to do next. Their name was Crawford, and the husband's name was John. And the amazing thing that happened is that I looked up the name Crawford in this huge Oakland phone book that was about that thick and found 15 pages of Crawfords and at least 3 or 4 pages of Jay or John Crawford. So I prayed, ran my finger down a page of Crawfords, picked one out, and it turned out to be the right one. Well, meeting John and Helen Crawford resulted in a big turning point in my life. I had been engaged to my high school sweetheart, Bill, and at this time, I began to feel strongly that this was not what God wanted me to do. So with great sadness, I ended my engagement, and I also graduated from the Kaiser Foundation School of Nursing. Now, John and Helen Crawford worked with a fundamentalist, non-denominational group called the Navigators International, and their vision was to know Christ and to make him known. They assisted the Billy Graham Association with all their crusades by starting Bible studies and helping people grow spiritually, often meeting with them on a one-to-one basis, which they did with me. I soon decided to move to the Navigator headquarters in Colorado Springs, Colorado, in 1961 to work as a nurse and also as a secretary there and study discipleship. And that's where I met my husband, Russell Korth, my husband-to-be. He was in charge of a communications ministry to servicemen all over the world wherever there was a military base. Now, the Navigators were known as the Navigator Never Daters. Many young people lived and worked and studied on this beautiful 300-acre spread next to the Garden of the Gods in Colorado Springs. We all got to know each other without having to date. We had to be very discreet if we felt romantically inclined toward another person. Russ and I were very discreet. And there's more I could say. We were married in 1963, and we moved to Boulder, Colorado, where Russ finished college, getting his master's degree in mathematics, and I worked as a nurse for doctors. And we had our first two children. Then we moved to the East Coast, where Russ taught mathematics at the University of Norfolk, and we continued work with the Navigators, reaching out to the 40,000 sailors that were stationed on ships and the Green Berets in North Carolina also, plus having our third child. Russ was asked to be a regional director for the Navigators, which included the entire East Coast, and this meant that we always had a house full of people, mostly single military men, and sometimes their wives and children. It was during this time that we learned about our young son's diagnosis of cerebral palsy. Now, it was a good thing that we had multitudes of servicemen and friends available to volunteer and help us as we entered an extensive program of physical therapy with Trevor that required all the help we could find. We learned many lessons in those days. It was at this time that I began to ask questions of God as to why Trevor was handicapped and what I should do. I stumbled across some books in the library about a person named Edgar Casey, and then my mother sent me one also. Edgar Casey and his followers learned that there is reincarnation and karma and that we may be required to reincarnate numerous times on this planet. Well, I was dumbfounded. God was answering many questions for me through these books. I was working with a fundamentalist Christian organization, married to a man who was a Christian fundamentalist, and all my friends were Christian fundamentalists. And the more I read these Edgar Casey books, the more concerned and the more hunger I acquired to learn more. But I had to be careful, and so I hid my books because my friends were not open to the teachings found in the books about Edgar Casey. We moved from the East Coast to the West Coast in 1971, and we lived in Santa Ana for 4 years. We led Bible studies, held men and women's programs, we invited special speakers, we witnessed to our neighbors, and we rescued an alcoholic cousin and her son and her friends over and over. Another story. Meanwhile, I hid my precious books about Edgar Casey until one day my husband found them and confronted me. Then he threw them all away. So I went out and I bought some more, and I hid them better this time. And I arranged to take Sunday afternoons off from the household. And one Sunday, I was driving toward Anaheim when I saw a sign on a spiritualist church that taught classes on meditation, reincarnation, and more. So I attended these classes on Sunday afternoons, and I learned more about what I was craving to learn. Finally, things happened so that we resigned from the Navigators, and my husband went to work for an organization called Churches Alive, which required that he travel all over the U.S., helping churches of all denominations settle their problems and teach people how to study the Bible and do evangelism. This resulted in our family moving to Banning, California, a small town between San Bernardino and Palm Springs. As my husband's travel requirements increased and as we realized we were sitting on the San Andreas earthquake fault, we decided to move to Sulphur Springs, Texas, which was more centrally located, where I live now and have lived since 1981. I went to work for the Texas Department of Health as a public health nurse. Our kids all graduated from school here and they moved on. Now, one day while I was working as a public health nurse, I was talking to one of the social workers I worked with, and he told me about a book called Saint Germain and Alchemy by Elizabeth Clare Prophet. And then he loaned it to me. I was really excited by this book, so I called a telephone number in the back of the book, and I found out that there were people in the Dallas area who followed the teachings of Saint Germain as shared by Elizabeth Clare Prophet in this and a slew of other books she had been led to write about the masters of the Universal Great White Brotherhood. Since my husband was gone a lot, I managed to travel to the Summit Lighthouse of Dallas and learn all that I could about the masters and the Great White Brotherhood. This was about 1989, when suddenly everyone at the Dallas Summit Lighthouse was concerned about building shelters and getting emergency food, and I got all concerned about it too, and I ended up ordering about $2,000 worth of emergency food in case our family would need this. The problem is, I didn't have the nerve to tell my husband. So one day, between his travels while I was at work and he was resting at home, an 18-wheeler truck arrived at our house and it delivered $2,000 worth of food in huge drums. My husband called me in a panic and he said, "What is going on here? Tell me this is a mistake and they have the wrong house." Well, unfortunately, I couldn't tell him that. So we went through some rough times. My husband temporarily left me and I wished him well. I was sad, but I told him I could understand if he wanted to live elsewhere. After a few weeks of eating, cleaning, washing, and sleeping alone, my husband changed his mind. He had hoped that his leaving me would cause me to change my mind. He realized that I would not change my new belief system, so he came home. We worked things out, and he even came to that point where he defended me to our now fundamentalist children and helped me with my homework assignments when I took the ministerial course offered by the Summit Lighthouse of Dallas. and the Summit Lighthouse, or actually the Church Universal and Triumphant staff, in 1999. We opened our health food store in our home. We moved it into town in 1995 with a GNC franchise, and I continue to run this store as a small business to this day. Russ also retired from Churches Alive, and he began to buy properties and fix them up and sell them. He died in 2010, and I continue to own the health food store and manage the properties we have left. I first heard about David Lewis and the Heart Center in March of 2005, and I was able to get hold of Lonello's 33 dictations at that time. These dictations were so exciting to me that I determined to learn all I could. And then I was able to hear David share his testimony from a home in Santa Rosa, California, through my computer. I was struck by the fact that David did not choose or seek after the mantle of messenger for the masters. And also he realized that he would have to give up his business and possibly lose his wife and his home. And yet he obeyed this calling. He did lose a lot, but just like the story of Job, he got everything back and much more. When my husband Russ died, I floundered around and I was mildly depressed for a few months. There's a scripture in the Bible that says, cast all your care upon him, upon God, for he careth for you. I had always cast at least a major portion of my care upon my husband because he was real good at taking care of everything, which allowed me to do whatever I wanted with the Heart Center, helping people at the store, never having to worry about house repairs, plumbing, septic tanks, collecting property payments, knowing the difference between equity and amortization and market values, how to deal with insurance and taxes. Now I was having to cast all my care really upon God, upon my solar presence, in a way I just hadn't realized before. Plus, I now simply had to learn a whole lot more about the businesses we were in. Once I had finally said, okay, beloved presence, I am willing to learn and do whatever is required of me now, two people came forth and were provided to help me. Two young men who are like sons to me, and they have helped me manage the store and my properties and much more. But I don't depend upon them totally. I depend upon my presence. Today I have a class on near-death experience book studies, which I teach twice a month, and I teach Sunday school in my local Methodist church to the adult class, and I am a team leader for the HeartShare Newcomers teleclass, which meets monthly. I spend a lot of time helping customers from my store, and sometimes I speak on our local radio station, or I teach a class at my store on things like preventing cancer, heart disease, bone diseases, arthritic problems, digestive problems, and so forth. So here we are today, and I am delighted to be part of the volunteer staff of the Heart Center community. And I am thrilled to be able to share all that this means to me with you. Thank you for letting me share this story.
Thank you very much. What a fun life you've had. Fun and easy, right? Yeah. I do have one last question. I know we're up against the clock here. And that is, since you've joined the Heart Center, it sounds like things have kind of accelerated in your life spiritually. Is there any one thing that particularly stands out, that one last thing you'd like to share with us?
That stands out? I think the thing that stands out is the last thing I shared, that once we totally give in or commit or promise to be all that God wants us to be and let him do it, he provides the helpers, and they come forth in many ways. And in my case, it came forth through these two young men who are like sons to me. And also, I could just feel the presence of angels so many times when I ask, like, what I should do about this or what I should do about that or this or that person that's not coming through with their property payments, or this or that person that needs something from our store and doesn't have the money. And I usually just help them out whatever way I can. And I've learned a lot about just being available always to whoever asks me, a reason of the hope that is in me.
Thank you, Donna. Thank you so much for being with us today and sharing your story. We are so grateful for your being one of our wonderful heart friends.
Thank you.
And sharing your sacred life. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.